Hello, you're listening to Crossing the Desert. This podcast is a reality series about how I build my small business in the Emirates. I'm Isaac. In each episode, I share how my own business is going, but most importantly, I learn from other entrepreneurs who came to Dubai from India, Egypt, Palestine, Caribbean Islands, UK, Russia, and many other countries. Stories of their success and challenges will help me on my own way. The podcast is brought to you by Fortis, the omnichannel platform that integrates POS, CRM, orders, payments, and loyalty programs for small and medium-sized businesses. That's my friends chanting, happy birthday. Yay. I turned 29 this week. And well, actually, I'm still accepting congratulations. So feel free to write them in the comments. I'd love to read them. Honestly, blowing out the candles, I made a wish. Many of you may think that it would be something about health or love, but I want to learn how to be a business-oriented businessman by 30. Well, if you can call it that. Today's episode is definitely a step in the right direction. You will love it. I'm the kind of guy who comes into business from a craft. You know those guys. Danny's good at cooking, so he launches a line of sauces. Daniel and Scott are surfers, so they open a surfing school. And I'm good at teaching English, so obviously I open a school. That's the way out of craft, but there's also another way from business. For example, remember Galina Volgach from one of the previous episodes? I bet she doesn't make renovation by her own hands, right? But she built a successful apartment renovation business and then the real estate business. I mean, she can change spheres and every time she achieves success, she just knows something about numbers and business models. My guest today is from the same mold. He came into business not from the craft side, but from the entrepreneurial side. You can even see in the way that he talks about everything, less about the product and more about metrics. But now we're going to hear it all for ourselves and learn something from him.
I knew I'm a hustler. I wanted to do something big, something impactful in life.
Meet Rakesh. He's the founder of the Hive Board Game Cafe. He started out in Dubai as a corporate employee. In operations, as a head of retail, brand management, he had a solid corporate career. But he approached it in an unusual way.
I never worked to impress my bosses. I used to love numbers. You know, in corporate, there are two types of people. One, people who work on numbers, they perform. And second is they are very good with their bosses. They know how to market themselves, whatever. Good for them. But I couldn't do that. I tried. I couldn't do that. But what helped me was focusing on numbers and focusing on my customers. I remember this scene wherein I used to handle South Africa market. So we had a global, like national distributors there, very big company. I was handing over to the other person. So we had a joint video meeting with me, the new person, my boss, the owner of the South African company and my counterpart in that company. While my boss was trying to introduce the new person, the South African team, they couldn't stop talking about me and congratulating me and telling them how helpful I have been in setting up the systems, the proposals, the stock, the collection, the marketing plan for them. Because I like a plan ahead. I'm a planner. And my boss was trying to get back to the conversation about the new guy, but they couldn't stop talking about how grateful they were. So that was one moment I still remember from my whole job.
God, I love this story. I can't imagine your boss's face, you know?
Yes, like, exactly.
But we have another person. Right? He's like, well, what about this one? What do we think about this one? Cool.
I realized that I'm not meant for a corporate setting. I always had a business mind. Like, you know, not just a functional role. I always thought about overall business of the brand, of the company. Profit margins, consumer journey, feedbacks. Everything together.
Ah, yes. He felt like an entrepreneur, but to become an entrepreneur, he needed a push. And that push was COVID. Yes, the COVID. Just like many entrepreneurs of our generation.
So in Dubai, lockdown lasted for just 3 months. During 3 months, I was a bit paranoid about losing my job. Dubai is a place where life becomes too convenient. The money is good. You don't pay taxes. Life was pretty good, pretty stable, comfortable. And the thought of losing my job and going back to India, going 3 years behind my career, kind of triggered this thought that I should start my own business. Then me and my best friend, we both are in our mid-30s. We both are single. We don't have responsibilities of our families. They're all well-to-do. They're very healthy. We had savings and we thought this is the moment we should start something of our own. Worst thing that can happen, we lose all our money. We go back to India. We start from zero again, but we can always find jobs. We can survive. It's not that we will die, but this is the moment.
Welcome to the game. And now for the most crucial moment. Listen how a business-oriented entrepreneur decides what kind of business he wants to do. During the lockdown, he and a friend often played board games and they thought, well, it was a direction worth exploring. So first, they made a research and realized that board game cafes are trending globally. Then they began a competitive analysis.
Within Dubai, there were two board game cafes already like existing before us. We didn't know about it. When the lockdown ended, we went to visit them and we understood the concept better. We went to the cafe and we were six of us. We were six people and we got intimidated by the sheer number of board games that they had. And you know, when you are with friends, you don't want to sound stupid because you think you won't understand the rules. So we started with simple Jenga, you know, the safest. And then we were seeing other people, they were playing some interesting looking games with a lot of characters and elements. There was this guy who was teaching people game. So we asked him for a suggestion. And he came back with a game and he taught us in 2 minutes. And we really loved the game. It was Pictionary, but with red glasses and red sketch pen. So when you are drawing, you can't see what you're drawing. It gave us a little bit confidence. We got a taste for it. And then we're like, okay, bring on the new game. We were there for 4 hours. We didn't touch our phones. We had so much fun. And we were surprised because for us, board games is Monopoly, Jenga, Risk, Chess, Ludo. So we knew basic 10 to 15 board games. But we realized it's a different world out there. And then we went back and we started thinking about what was missing there. So what we realized was the person who was teaching us games was also serving us food. So we realized that this should, to have a complete experience, we should have a guru, a game master, who will not serve you food, who will not take your orders, but will be just there as a teacher, as your guide, and introduced to this world. That thing kind of changed. It was a game changer for us. One more thing that we realized was this needed a bigger space because it's not just about board games, it's about people. So when we went, it was a 1,000 square feet area. We got a 3,200 square feet area, two floors, around 28 tables, seating capacity of 150 people. So when on weekend, the cafe is full, it is a different vibe. I would like to explain it to you, but I cannot because when it's so many people playing board game, it's like a community center. People are shouting, it gets hot, people are competitive, they're ordering food. And it's not like a professional or a fine dine place that you expect in Dubai. It becomes like a school with kindergarten kids. That's the closest thing I can explain it to you.
I love your comparison to kindergarten games because knowing myself, like, you know, I'm a very competitive person. Yeah. Like my friends hate playing games with me, especially Monopoly, because I'm the one that always like screams, gets too personal and stuff like that. So I'm trying to as well limit that as well. Yeah. Being a dedicated board gamer is actually a traditional Arab quality. I can say I'm too enthusiastic all I want, but it's nothing compared to how far the game and excitement can go. For example, Harun al-Rashid, the legendary ruler of the Arab Caliphate in the late 8th century, he adored chess. Playing only with other chess enthusiasts wasn't enough for him. He made chess compulsory. By his order, everyone in his court had to play. But that's not all. He looked for people who could play chess in some unusual way, blindfolded. For example, He invited them to court, gave them titles and breeches, and of course, such players were becoming famous. They were first talked about at court and then in markets, coffee houses, and other public places. Chess was played at court. Chess was talked about on every corner, and as a result, ordinary people started to play chess. Like, chess became viral, but it did not even stop back there. The thing is, at that time, he was just establishing diplomatic relations with the King of Franks, Charlemagne. Part of this relationship was the exchange of gifts, and this exchange itself also became a competition. I mean, a competition where literally whose gift was more luxurious. Charlemagne sent Haroun Spanish horses, colorful Frisian clocks, and impressive hunting dogs. Haroun decided to send an even more impressive package. He sent a present consisting of silks, brass candelabra, perfume, balsam, like tent with many colored curtains, a live elephant. It was, I guess, the first elephant in Europe since antiquity. And ivory chessmen. Was Harun al-Rashid thinking of getting his fellow king hooked on chess so that they could have something to do during their diplomatic visits? Or was he hoping to get the whole of Europe hooked on board games? We don't know how much Charlemagne liked the chessmen because the life elephant obviously overshadowed it. And it's the elephant of all the gifts was the one that made its way into literature and legend, but I'm sure that chessmen meant no less to Harun al-Rashid. Our story will not be mainly about Arab traditions and chess, but about another game, business. And Rakesh stepped into entrepreneurship with a serious preparation.
So when we started planning, we realized like, okay, we need at least 1.1 to 1.2 million dirham, close to $300 to have the operations set up, have the initial team, pay the initial quarterly rent, the trade license, furniture, games. And we made an Excel. Imagine you and your best friend, without having knowledge of how to start a cafe, you sit down on an Excel, you just put the points that you think you will spend on, like your camera, your speaker, your coffee machine, your cutlery. We wrote everything and it came down to around 900,000 dirhams. Then we checked our finance. We had access to that money. I will break it up. So I took a loan of 250,000 dirhams from my old job. Because in Dubai, if you have this certain salary, you can take a loan of 250k at a very good interest, like 5% annual interest. I sold my property back home in India. I had some land I had, you know, bought from my savings. And that was another 200,000 and 50,000 dirhams I had in my account. My partner had 300,000 savings. And he got 200,000 from his brother in Canada. We got around a 1 million dirham point. And we could arrange that money within 1 month, which was surprising even for us. We just got it in our account, like in Dubai. So August, we started planning. We did everything, the basic work, trade license. Like before spending money, we did our research and we found out this is what we have to do. First September, we both put in our papers, we left our jobs, we started working on it, everything. And within 3 months, we started spending everything. And we were surprised that we were able to start the cafe within that stipulated time and within that plus 5% of the initial plan that we had. I was so happy that I was able to start the business and my initial plan did work out. So July, we started talking about it. September, we left our jobs. We sold our properties, took loan. And by November, we launched the Highboard Cafe.
Did you notice how Rakesh and his partner perfectly calculated the budget of time and money? They had no experience with cafes and they couldn't be sure which expenses to add to Excel table. And yet, their calculations turned out to be amazingly accurate. Like, they rebuilt the cafe in 3 months and met their own estimate with only 5% correction. Which is really impressive. You know, those estimates for renovations, they always double. I thought to make this happen, you have to be extremely economical. I mean, to make the most basic repairs to open on the minimum with bare walls and shelves from IKEA. Well, but it turns out no. Not in MENA, not in Dubai.
Dubai is a place where people love Instagram.
Obviously, yes.
I travel a lot of places. Like after my cafe, I travel almost every alternate month. One thing I realized about Dubai and other places, people in Dubai are obsessed about Instagram, their social life, their social media. So we had to make a place that was Instagram friendly. Board games as a concept is still new to most of the people. Most people, they think board games is about Monopoly, Jenga, Ludo, chess. They do not know it's a different world out there. And it might be fun. This is something they might be interested in. So to get people in, I need to have a place wherein you have, so I have one wall, it's like 20 feet high and it's a 20 feet graffiti there. So people come and take pictures. Then we have one, say 30 feet big rack of games wherein we have more than 700 games. So all these things have a cost. I remember the when we were putting up that graffiti, the artist, it was a, what do you call that, spray paint artist. And he asked for 20,000 dirhams for that entire piece. Now, when you are starting a business, you have to take these calls. Whether is this something that would fetch in money? Because 20,000 dirhams was a big amount. But we realized we need to have a showstopper kind of spot for Instagram users. And me and my friend, we discussed and like, let's go ahead with it. And now that has become like an identity. I see so many people's Facebook profile, Instagram profile. They have that picture back of the in the Instagram page.
I love this part of the interview. It is a great entrepreneurial skill to give up the secondary things without regret, but also without regret to throw all the resources at really important things. And most importantly, being able to distinguish one from the other. That's a great case study on making an MVP. And now, I'm sure it's time to listen to how Rakesh manages the business operation and how he relies on numbers to make database decisions.
We don't use a lot of numbers because we like check the overall, but some key number that have helped us, we were tracking the average spending capacity of a person. Initially, when we started, it was 65 dirham per person. So I'll tell you our gaming charges. 1 hour, 15 dirhams. 2 hours, 25 dirhams. And 35 dirhams for unlimited hours. You can stay till end of the day and play till the end. So overall, margin, percentage, and the value went up when there were more unlimited hours. So first thing that we did was we created modules like starter games, main course games, and dessert games. So when you come in my cafe with three of your friends, I will give you these games as starters, which will keep you engaged for 1 hour. After that, my game masters will go, they'll tell you, okay, if you like this game, I'll give you a game which is a little slow, but you will enjoy it. It's very easy and you will engage a lot of mind and people will play for 2 hours. When they finish the main course, they're tired. My game master, okay, you will love this simple game. In the end, it's a fun game. So from 1 hour, 2 hours, we try to convert them into unlimited hours.
For me, it's a cool case study about upselling. I mean, how to turn a customer willing to pay 15 dirhams per hour into someone who will pay 35 for an unlimited game time. But if you easily perceive the numbers by ear, you have already noticed that this is not the whole business secret. Spending capacity of the person in this business is not 35 dirhams per customer, but 65 dirhams. So how does Rakesh double his spending capacity of the person? Just listen.
But, you know, then we start thinking, okay, people are occupying the same space. So, example, one person sits for 5 hours. He pays 35 dirham. And another person, they occupy 2 hours, 2 hours, or 2.5, 2.5. They would spend 50 dirhams. So, technically, for me, if I think logically, having 2 hours is better than unlimited hours. But when we did the numbers, we realized, I saw it from all the angles. In retail, we do a lot of planning with numbers, like pivots and Excel. We love looking at numbers from different angles. So then we realize when people sit for longer hours, they order water, they order coffee, they order milkshake, they order smoothies, they order soft drinks. These are all high margin values. When you play board games, you use a lot of energy. You need carbs. You want that carb. So people, they will keep ordering dessert. They'll keep ordering food. We started with just sandwiches and salads. Now we have a full-fledged menu of pizzas, pasta, sandwiches, burgers, salads, Mexican, desserts, a whole lot of drinks, beverages, smoothies, everything.
So, in a year after the launch, they opened a kitchen in Highport Cafe, and they started offering people not just coffee and sandwiches, but a full meal. That's what raised the spending capacity of the person. But he didn't stop back then, and he doubled his numbers. And again, he based his decisions on the data.
Then we created special combos and packages for big groups. It became a huge hook for me. Now we have these corporate groups, so many well-known brands. Amazon, they have weekly outing, like team outings in my cafe. So last 6 months, we have seen corporates coming up, having their team building activities at Hive. I'll give you an example. We created this unlimited food and gaming package for 119 dirhams per person.
Aha, and our spending capacity of the person goes up from 65 to 119 dirhams.
If you have 15 people, 20 people, you have a birthday party, you do not want them to order on their own because people order extra, it's a little chaotic, and a lot of food gets wasted. So what we do is we take this package 119 dirham, we tell people, okay, out of 119, 35 is just gaming. So in 80 dirhams, you get one welcome drink, you get unlimited starters. And starters, you have three options. You have nachos, you have French fries, you have garlic bread with cheese. Then you have unlimited main course. In main course, you have pizzas, pastas, like five, six options. Then you have one dessert brownie with ice cream. Then you have unlimited water, unlimited popcorn throughout the event.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
Okay, but how can it be profitable? I mean, unlimited food for 84 dirhams.
When I tell you unlimited, what you will think is, okay, I will have one drink, one pizza, one pasta, one side, you know, nachos. So I will spend 150, 160 dirham. But mostly, people do not eat that much. Even if it's unlimited, they would eat maybe 20%, 30% more. And for the amount 119 dirham, came to a 15% to 20% discount if a person orders individually these items.
Oh, check out the calculations. People usually think that with unlimited access to food, they'll eat by 150, 160 dirhams. And then they see a package for 190 dirhams, which includes unlimited games, which is 35 dirhams, and unlimited food, which is 84 dirhams. It looks like, wow. Like, you get food with 50% discount, and of course they like it. I mean, I like it. But if you can check it with an Excel, the person gets the food with only 50% off. Let me break it down for you. Even though people might think they would eat 160 dirhams worth of food, in reality, they're eating at most 100 dirhams worth. So they pay 84 dirhams for food and eat about 100 dirhams worth of food. So that's indeed the 15% discount.
And we still analyze, like every, even 2 years, we constantly analyze when we have a package. For example, there are 10 people who are coming in. We will have two bills for them. One is with the package, 119 into 10. This is your bill. One more bill that we create is we punch all the items that you are eating. And till date, our average, sometime it has, the discount has gone higher, but it doesn't exceed 15%. But giving a 15% discount helps me in increasing your average spend from 80 dirham to 120 dirham.
So, actually, since the opening of Hive Cafe, the spending capacity of the person has grown even more than twice. Wow. I mean, yeah, okay, wow. It's like I got a piece of the MBA, but on a practical case study. I mean, this approach, data-based decisions-making efficiency, Rakesh uses in all other parts of the business processes, not just when putting together combos. I know, hearing about numbers is no walk in the park, but let me give you just one more example. Well, a small one, just listen to this.
One thing I didn't mention before, and I take so much pride in it, in my cafe, our food wastage is not even 2% of the sales. I check in other restaurants and I go to restaurants because I'm new to the industry. I'm so curious. I will chat up with the manager. In a regular restaurant, the food wastage is between 30 to 40% of the purchased products. We order 80% of items. So a lot of things is frozen and can be used regularly. Then the fresh products, we will buy 80% of our average usage. And 20% we buy from a grocery store that is nearby. So the cost in the grocery and from the vendor, the difference is not more than 25-30%. When we create menu, for example, if I'm including strawberry or say rosemary in one drink, I will make sure that I introduce it in four more other places. So your overall wastage and your margin goes high.
I noticed what Rakesh said at the very beginning of this dive into the numbers, the MBA lecture. He said, we don't count too many numbers. We have one main metric, the spending capacity of the person. After that, he actually mentioned also cost price and percent of wastage as well, but it's still clear, to keep track of the numbers in a business, you have to keep track of few meaningful ones, not all and any random numbers, right? The same thing told me JP, marketing director at Fortis, when I asked about analytics that entrepreneurs gather while using Fortis for their business.
Humans have always wanted to have complete freedom. They want you to give them a tool, and they want to hear the phrase, you can do anything that you want. Now, this sentence in software can be very dangerous because a lot of users will end up not knowing how to develop a dashboard that is, and this is where the keyword is, clear. Clear analytics, clarity, is extremely important. And the majority of the people do not know how to create a clear dashboard. Not because they're not capable of doing it, but because they're often not able to frame their thinking process. They will start with one graphic, and then they will add another graphic, and then another graphic. And then you will end up with a dashboard with 15 KPIs with not much storytelling to how to read those graphics or where to look first or how to understand that data. So a lot of people will often ask to have what we call self-service business intelligence, which are very complicated tools that are usually given to data analysts, who are people who have been trained to create dashboards and to understand data. But in reality, what the majority of merchants need is what you would call a storytelling business intelligence, something that is already built in for them. And that's precisely what Fortis has done. We continue to innovate with our products with the desire to enable our merchants to grow their businesses. And we continue to build products that are true to our values, which is simplicity, clarity, and ease of use, which is why Fortis Analytics is about providing a built-in dashboard for merchants that covers the performance of their products, of their channels, of their shops, and of their employees. And that's the secret sauce of Fortis, simplicity that is built into the product for the sake of our merchants.
So I realized looking at smaller numbers can make you crazy because you don't know how to control them. So you look at the bigger picture. So for my monthly costing, every month I look at the amount of percentage of money that I spent on my food and like things that I have to buy, like groceries, maybe stationery. So everything, my monthly expenditure should not be more than 15%. So you keep these bigger picture and then you can look at the overall number. If your cost of goods is exceeding 15% of your overall sales. If it's going high, then you again check and then you make corrections. So people ask us for ROI. You know, if I'm having a like banter with a friend or somebody wants to invest or wants idea, they ask me, what is the ROI? Our ROI is 90%, which sounds ridiculous.
It is. There is no return on investments like that. Come on. It's like it's insanely good model.
And if amateurs like us can do it, then it's not a big deal. People can do it better. People don't realize it, but we have done a very amateur job.
We talked to Rakesh about the numbers some more. He gave this breakdown. Of each 100 dirhams earned, 40 are from board games, 60 are from food. 15 cover food costs and 45 dirhams would be food gross margin. How good is that? Not bad for amateurs, right? What if I told you that this 90% ROI business was one step away from failure? Do you want a little business drama? Well, buckle up and listen up then. Even before Rakesh opened the kitchen in his game cafe, made all those cool combos and reduced his percent of wastage to almost zero, how to sell the damn business and pay off his debts. Yes. So, remember how it all started, right? The guys calculated in Excel that they needed at least 1.2 million dirhams to open, raised 1 million, renovated the place in 3 months, bought games, put in a coffee machine, and launched the business. And then they became super successful. But what I haven't told you yet is the story about how exactly they came from that start to their success. So, what happened back then? And how did it happen?
We were obsessed. We did not think it through. We did the numbers on paper, things looked pretty good, but there's always when you step into an uncharted territory, especially I'm not from cafe background, I was not an avid board gamer, it becomes a little hard to enter a very competitive industry. Like cafes and restaurants, 80% of cafes and restaurants fail within first 4 years of operations. If you set up a cafe, you need to keep at least 6 months of operational expense in your bank account when you launch a cafe. That is a recommended number. We didn't do it. We spent everything because we wanted a space that thought whatever we wanted to have, we spent everything on that. We were left with 20,000, 30,000 dirham in our account. And we started the cafe hoping that we would cover the expenses from the sales. Very big risk. I wouldn't suggest it to anybody. So November, we managed. By the end of December, we had no money to pay the rent, no money to pay salaries. I had no money to pay for my apartment. My credit cards were maxed out. I was begging for people. Like in my life, I had never asked for money. I'm very good with money. I've always saved money in my life. I spend on experiences, I live a comfortable life, but I've never asked for a loan, especially from friends or family. So I asked my dad, I asked my sister, I asked my closest friends. Like that was the lowest point in my life when I look back. The problem was in India, the lockdown lasted for much longer. There was no cash available in the market. So my sister could not help me. My dad said he will try. My best friend, he couldn't help me. My another close friend, he told me he bought a new home recently, just before the lockdown, and he needed money to pay the installment. I was a little lost. So I was going to sell my car. I had put it on Dubizzle, like it's a selling app. Thankfully, within a week, my dad called. He has friends in Dubai, so he's like, I can get you 50,000 dirhams. Just to manage 1 month. The friend who had bought a home, he called me like, see, I have around, $2,000 that I can give it to you. Will it help you? And I still remember whenever I talked to him, I spoke to his sister recently, and I still remember that day because he didn't have to help me. It was lockdown people and there was no guarantee I would pay him back. But because he loves me, he sent me those $2,000 and I can never forget that day. When he needed the money, he had no obligation, but he tried to help me out. Like, humanity, friendship. So my dad sent me money. I managed my home rent. January, we managed. February, we realized this is not working. Okay, one good thing about the operation was people loved the place. They loved the service. We had a 40% repeat rate even within the first month, first and second month. So that was really promising, but we thought that, the sales is too low and even with regular sales, regular walk-ins, we would be better off having, my salary was paying me better than this business. So February, we tried to sell the business.
Okay, that is a plot twist. Okay, did not expect this to come. Okay.
I'm telling you, we were like kids, we were lost. We were just trying something. It came out of obsession. We were not thorough businessmen. We didn't know how businesses are run. It was just a trial, hit and trial thing that we have with friends. It was a very big risk. Fortunately, nobody offered us money. Nobody came to buy it. Then came March. The summers kicked in. We did a lot of influencer marketing that was helping us. One Instagram reel got viral. So we do a lot of micro-influencer marketing. Even till now, we invite a lot of micro-influencers. People like you and me with decent following, but good content. One video went viral. It had more than 1 million likes, 500,000 shares, and we became popular in Dubai. From March onwards, we were getting overbooked. On weekend, we had to send 50 people back. And from that point onwards, we didn't look back. By the end of January, so we had recovered our investment of 1 million dirhams in profit. It wasn't a very wise decision. It turned out to be pretty good. But if I think of myself back then, I would not suggest myself to take that step.
I thought the most important thing I would learn from Rakesh is to make database decisions that he learned in MBA and in retail. But now I feel like there's something even more important in this one. For all his ability to count and calculate, like with an initially working business model, Rakesh's business is almost ended. I mean, it was saved only by the loyalty of friends and family. And of course, a huge luck that a couple of months before the explosive success of the business, Rakesh and his friend did not find a single buyer. I don't know what this story is about for you, but I just bring it to you as it is. In the end, let's ask Rakesh how he's developing his business now, when he has all this experience, both disappointment and success.
We got a very good response and people started asking us, where are you expanding? Are you opening in Sharjah, in Abu Dhabi? So 22 and 23 have been very optimistic, but kind of a depressing phase for me because I was obsessed about the second cafe. Because the business model, it is a game changer. A regular cafe, say Starbucks, they would have a margin of 8% to 15% profit margin. We enjoy a 38% profit margin. So we charge people for playing board games as an activity. Plus we have game masters to teach them games, right? 40% of my revenue, my sales, come from board games, which is just a one-time investment and a small cost in salary. But in terms of a business model, it cannot get better. When you have done something out of nowhere and you have a formula in your hand, you want to replicate it. You do not want to stop. You are on a high and you think you can do wonders in your life. You know, you have that potential. I was so sure that we will open at least two branches in between 22 and 23. We tried a lot of spaces. We got an invitation from the Dubai Mall, Dubai Hills Mall, which is a new mall by MR, government of Sharjah. They had a location where they offered us space and one more mall in Abu Dhabi. All perfect locations, but things did not work out. 2 years, we have been planning, thinking, making business plans, numbers, but it did not happen. So the major reason with MR, Dubai Mall, was you cannot make profit when you open a store in Dubai Mall. That's what we realized. You know, they have a fixed rental, that this is the minimum rental that you will pay, which is very high. I'm not sure if I can share you the rental, but it's a huge amount. Then they have this clause that if your sales increase by this much, you will also, in addition to the rental, you will pay a percentage of your gross sales, not even profit, a percentage of gross sales.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. Big brands, big groups, they have a whole team that works on it. They have their lawyers, their operations team, their retail team, because they have clause that if you do not open on a certain time, like if there's a little some problem, the staff comes in late, they will straight away give you fines and huge amount. If your store opening gets delayed for any reason, the fines go from 300,000 dirham to up to 800,000 dirhams. Opening a store in Dubai Mall would give us access to all the mall within GCC region. You have arrived. Having 2,000 square foot or 3,000 square foot shop in Dubai Mall is the dream. Like, GCC opens up for you. But one thing we realized when we were working on this project was we are not ready for it. So in Dubai Mall, there is one location. It's one big, big area called... So it's like a gaming zone, like a 10,000 square foot gaming zone. They invited us to open a board game section there. 4 months, we were planning, we were working on it. And then everything was decided. We were supposed to pay the rental check, whatever. And this was manageable without the investor. This was the perfect move for us. My business partner, my best friend, in the last moment, he panicked and he told me that I'm not sure if this will get us enough sales. So I had a personal difference with him. And then I was like, 2 years I'm wasted on this. I'm obsessed about it. Maybe that is why it is not manifesting itself. So many things came into the picture that we realized we are not ready for it. We need some external support. We need some big hand, because opening a bigger store, taking up a bigger challenge, like this time we got smart. The first one came out of obsession because we were nobody. We didn't have anything to lose. But this stopped us. We got scared. And still when I think about it, I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing. But maybe there's a reason why it did not happen.
I don't know either. If it's a story about experiences that make you wiser, smarter, and more cautious, or it's a story about fear that settles in you and doesn't let you move on. I'm not at the stage to really understand it yet, but what I can definitely understand is this. You need to take steps. You need to try, because first, luck can help you, but with that luck, you can get an experience that will navigate you afterwards, right? You're listening to Crossing the Desert, podcast by Fortis. Fortis helps seamlessly connect businesses and their customers and run the business. It assists in attracting and retaining customers, selling products and services, accepting payments both online and in-store, and managing finances and personnel. Join Fortis social media. Links are in the episode description. Follow our podcast or add it to your favorites. Give us 5 stars or a heart. And leave us a comment. I'm still waiting for my birthday wishes comments. Okay? Good. And this will help other listeners to find out more about us, and we'll love to read and answer them. Production by Headshot Podcast Studio. Showrunners and editors, Alexandra Volkova and Yelena Volkova. The best of the best. Producer, Daria Sanikova. History consultant, Alena Podnebenna. Sound designer, Ksenia Kazantseva. And I'm your host, Isaac Delonin.